and welcome to OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
OEG Voices.
A new podcast bringing to you the voices and ideas
of open educators from around the world.
OEG Voices is
produced by Open Education Global,
a member-based
nonprofit organization
supporting the development and use
of open education globally.
Learn more about us
at oeglobal.org.
There's much to take in at a global level.
We hope to bring you closer
to how open education is working
by hearing the stories of practitioners
told in their own voices.
Each episode introduces you
to a global open educator,
and we invite you to later engage in conversation with them
in our OEG Connect community.
Welcome to yet another episode of OEG Voices. This is a podcast we're doing here at Open Education Global, and I am your host, Alan Levine, and I'm really excited to have my OEG colleagues, Marcelo Morales and Igor Laseco. How are you today?
Doing great. Thank you. It's wonderful to be here and having the opportunity to listen a little bit about this wonderful project. So looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you. Likewise, wonderful to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Well, what we're doing here is right now, nominations are open for this year's Open Education Awards. And so we hope listeners get inspired by our conversations today and think about someone or some project that's deserving of this recognition for next year. And those people will be here a year from now doing a podcast as Alan fumbles through the Zoom setup. But anyway, we're really happy to have Tanya Urban. See, I told you I messed up. We're happy to have Tanya and Mia here, who are recognized in 2020 for their Open Education Award in the Open Collaboration category for Open Education for a Better World. This is a really exciting project, and I think you really should know about this. It's really an example of what open education should do. Can we start out with just each of you telling us a little bit about yourself, where you're located, and kind of the work that you do?
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for your invitation. It's really a pleasure to be with you. So I'm Tanja Urbančić. I'm coming from Slovenia. It's a country of an extraordinary beauty, situated in Europe, surrounded by Italy, Austria, Hungary, and Croatia, and also very active in open education, as we will hear in the continuation. I work at the University of Nova Gorica as a Dean of School of Engineering and Management, where I'm also a researcher in the field of knowledge technologies, researcher and a teacher. And I always liked interdisciplinary projects where people collaborate across disciplines, and especially international projects where collaboration goes beyond borders of any kind. So now most of my work is concentrated and connected with projects like that. So this gives me really a lot of satisfaction.
Thank you, Amelia.
Yeah. Hello, everyone, everybody around the globe. So I work officially at the National Research Institute in Slovenia, which is called Jože Stefan Institute. And I have so many hats at the Institute that I would probably need to buy a special wardrobe to put all these hats into that. So one hat is that I am the head of the Center for Knowledge Transfer, which actually takes care about everything that goes on at the Institute and to put it into practice. That would mean in particular through the education. This is how actually I came into the play of open education. Then I am researcher on the area of artificial intelligence, and we do quite a lot of interesting things on AI. And because of the first hat, I get into the third hat, which is the UNESCO Chair on Open Technologies for Open Education and Open Education Resources. And the recently, since we were establishing the first International Research Center on AI under auspices of the UNESCO, I'm also involved with the management of the GERCAI, which would be consuming quite a lot of time. So what I do a lot of things, and in particular, I'm interested in how AI can address the global issues. And global issues would mean everything that goes from hunger to deployment to everything. So, and since we did quite a lot of work in the past and we are still doing research work, so we see that capacity of AI is quite huge. So certainly these are the things which should be involved, and in particularly in education as well. So the link between open education and AI is me trying to, or us, the group, trying to push things into open education. So how AI can actually help solve the issues that we have in open education related to personalization, to cultural issues, multilinguality, content structuring, personalization, all these things which are certainly important to something which should be a different approach to education. So this is my, let's say, my final not goal, but incentive is actually to try to make a better world through education.
You're right. Both of you, I think, have quite many hats that are worn. And what better goal than to like aim for a better world? So you started to hint at it. What was the origin story for Open Education for a Better World? And how did you two come to decide to come through with this program?
Actually, the story started in September 2017, when Ljubljana, our hometown, hosted the second World Open Educational Resources Congress. And with Nitya, we were thinking how to start something that would have roots in this Congress, but would live long after it. So we wanted to use the energy of global community for something with concrete results and with global impact. So I still remember the discussion in our office where when Nitya mentioned an inspiring project, Data Science for Social Good. And then we developed the idea towards the Open Education for a Better World. It's different, but it shares this social good component, which really triggered us a lot. So we decided to try the idea. And already some weeks after that, we launched a call, and we were very positively surprised by the response. Really, we saw immediately that experts were clearly willing to volunteer as mentors in this program. Actually, we also got some wonderful, really exciting ideas for OER to be developed. So 14 projects were accepted, and most of them also finished successfully. And this year finished with a very nice, inspiring final event of that year, held in Vipava at the location of our university in Slovenia. So many participants were able to come. We got some sponsorships to help them to come. And this was really wonderful to see all these people together after working online together for several months towards these wonderful goals that were achieved. So we were really encouraged by the results of the first year, and also by this very positive energy and enthusiasm. This was really exceptional. So we decided to continue next year, and we faced a surprising rise of interest. So actually, the number of applications doubled, and we had 35 developers accepted in the second year. And then the story goes on with 80 in the third year and over 100 this year. So this growth actually requires substantial rethinking and improvements of the model. This is an ongoing process. So we observe and collect feedback and try to do it as well as possible.
So maybe to add, so we've been actively involved in policy level, so preparing the OER recommendation with UNESCO. And of course, since we do AI and we do development on IT, we are heavily involved in developing tools and the infrastructures and everything. So something was missing in between. And this was a kind of a, let's say, a follow-up link, which certainly was there. And we were thinking about how can we actually push things that would be not be just a project, but something that would become a movement. And the idea here is, you know, this is now a model that certainly works. So just spread it across the globe and make a global change. So here we are today. And I think We are still trying to do novelties. We are still trying to think about what could we do better, what could we do worse. Some things are we've learned quite a lot, but some things are quite challenging. And I think that here, certainly, if this would be approached also by other communities in the open education, that might be a very interesting and challenging movement.
And it's just so commendable that when you looked at this, you took in what I see it's written on the website, it's a person-focused process. And that's actually kind of commendable for our field, because we tend mm-hmm. to gravitate towards, you know, the OERs and the technology. And so can you describe to us how this mentoring model works, and like how do you connect people, and then what is the structure that mentees go through during their year working on the projects?
So from the start, it was like, you know, getting all the friends we know into that. So we were calling people and messaging people around, saying that would you be willing to, you know, be a mentor for somebody who has an incentive to create a OER that would try to solve a global issue. And this is how it actually starts. But then everything went into the more like formalized process. But so how mentoring work is that, you know, we just have an open call now for all the experts across the globe who want to participate and to be mentored to an applicant who wants to develop an OER. Because on one side, we've seen that people understand that there should be or must be a potential to address some of the issues with OER, but on the others, they don't have capacities and they don't have knowledge in particular. So, and on the other end, we have all these friends, you guys, the communities we are involved in, which, you know, we have all this knowledge, know-how, so to help these people getting to the final point. But essential element is that the one who is running the show is the one who is developing OER, not the mentor. The mentor is there to help. So what we want to do, or what we're trying to do through this network, is actually provide this help. And so this help could be, you know, diverse. It could be from, you know, basics of OER to technical development, or to a specific content, which would be, I don't know, medical thing, or, you know, expertise from the domain for which we, you know, we have to find other experts as well. So the community of mentors is not just about people who are from the OER community. It's about all the mentors who understand that they could participate in and help somebody developing OER. So this is how it works. And how mentoring goes is like Tanya taking like a week off, reading all these applications and reading all the mentors and trying to match, make a first match. And then we discuss this with all the groups, all the hub coordinators in particular, whether this matches are okay. And then it's about asking both of them, of course, the applicant and the mentor, whether you think that you might work together. And this is how it works. There's no magic. It's just basic incentive, right?
Well, matching is actually really done very carefully, because we believe that this is one of the key points of the success. So, yes, it's true. I really read very carefully all CVs, all proposals. And then I just try to imagine who would really help to this person. How would these two persons work together? Is there potential also for a collaboration, maybe also when the project is finished? So I really try to match and to form really good teams. And of course, I don't do it alone. Then we consult other people, because it's really important to take into account many, many different aspects. So this is one of the key points of success, I think. And the other one, I believe, is strong and clear motivation of everybody involved. So I think it's really important that the projects actually focus on SDGs, sustainable development goals, and there are genuine, real needs behind every project. And this is really motivational also for the mentors that believe that these projects are important. So I think this is in the very essence of the idea, and it makes it work, I believe. Then, of course, it's important that we try to improve the model with such a big number of projects. We had to introduce also hub coordinators to help us with organization, because it's just impossible to follow each of the projects by ourselves. And we were lucky to get really wonderful hub coordinators that also believe in the importance of the program and each of these projects. And there's these wonderful teams of developers and mentors and everyone.
So you should ask Igor about being a mentor and a hub coordinator, and how, you know, what would that mean? Work, of course, you understand what would that mean, that this is an international team, so you have all these strange hours of meetings and everything. But yeah, we take care that this is not a local thing, that it should be global. That would mean also that the mentor and the applicant and the, you know, the complete group is actually international.
Yep, I'm getting ready to call on Igor, but yeah, right now. And because Igor, you've got experience with this program, and it'd be great to hear your perspective.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to elaborate on the role of the hub coordinators in the program. But I would actually certainly like to ask first Mitya or Tanya to elaborate a little bit more about the rationale behind introducing the hubs. You alluded to it earlier also, Mitya. So why did you introduce the hubs? I think partly, as Tanya has elaborated, is to help manage those projects, the growing number of projects over the years. But could you say a little bit more about the hubs? How many hubs are there? You know, how are they organized? Are they organized according to regions? Are they organized according to specific themes? If you would please elaborate on that.
So in the first year, there was no need of hubs. With Mitya, we were able to follow each of the projects. We met with the teams because we think it's important to give support, to check if everything goes all right, if people need something else. But then already in the second year, we introduced three geographical hubs. So we tried to take care about time zones to make it a little bit easier for collaboration. So there was one hub for South and North America, one for Africa and Europe, one for Asia and that part of the world. So, and then in the third year, we actually introduced the first topical hub. And I think that this was a very important point in the program. So we decided to group all projects around SDG 7, dealing with energy, climate changes, and so on, into one hub. And this actually gives a new opportunity to developers for collaboration across the projects and to do also something more ambitious together. So that's actually something we developed further in the next year, when we already have three topical hubs, but we also kept three geographical hubs. So we are actually experimenting with different models, but we somehow believe that these topical hubs are the future.
This is about not just about managing the thing, but also to spread the distribution. For example, if you, Ellen, would be having an idea of a hub for the next year, you know, very, very welcome. So that's the plan, right? So the openness, the sharing the model, the distribution, the large scale up is just about using whatever we developed to make it happen. So that's it.
Absolutely. And you've more or less described almost exponential growth in terms of this, which is the wonderful problem to have. I'd be curious too, if you could maybe give some sample examples of the types of projects that people are doing, so our audience might understand what kind of OERs people are designing to meet the sustainable development goals.
So actually, we are talking about diversity, and we are talking about all SDGs, actually. So there are projects from climate change to prevention suicide, then from green chemistry to human rights, from supporting refugee and immigrant students to food production and consumption It's really, I mean, I would like to invite listeners to go to the website of the project and to see all these wonderful projects described at one place.
That's great. And so, yeah, and I want to also go back to Igor because to hear about what it's like to be a mentor and also to work as one of these coordinator positions. And what do you see as kind of someone in within the network of OE for a Better World?
Okay, thank you, Alan. So yeah, I got involved, I think, in 2018 when Mitya approached me through one of his communications saying that, would you be willing to help out a little? Little I knew that it was going to turn out into a multi-year involvement. But yeah, it has been a great experience being involved in this program, the sense of community worldwide that it helped to create as well. And I think that over the years, well, I've been involved in the hub coordinating capacity over like the past 3 years. And just to give you a better idea of what it really involves, so as Mitya has already mentioned, Tania takes about a week at the beginning of each year to review all of the applications for projects and for mentors, does the initial pairings, and then basically they forward all of the information onto us into different geographical hubs or thematic hubs. And us as hub coordinators, we then take it forward in terms of following up with the project leaders and the mentors. We need to ask them whether they are willing to accept this assignment, and then we introduce them to the project leaders and initiate the first round of calls to discuss the project or the initiative. And then we also do like regular checking ins throughout the program cycle. So over the period of 6 months or so, we would check in with them every 6 weeks or so, asking them about the progress, if there are any issues. And we also kind of track progress silently. So we check what's happening, if project mentor or the coordinator or the project leader or the mentor are communicating on a regular basis. If they are not, you do need to intervene just to make sure just to find out what's happening, if they need additional support or help. So that's in a nutshell our role as hub coordinators. And then we also do help to shape the final event of the program, contribute to the program itself. So I'm not sure if you have already mentioned it, Mitya or Tania, but you can perhaps elaborate on that a little bit more. But the program culminates each year with an event during which the project leaders and sometimes mentors have an opportunity to present the outputs from their respective initiatives. And this happens either online, well, it happened online for the first time, fully online last year because of COVID, obviously. But prior to that, it was happening in Vipava in Slovenia. Well, this year, it's probably going to be an online event again. But then I'll defer to Mitya and Anya to elaborate on that specific aspect. I would just also like to say that as for hub coordinators, I think that this is kind of a learning experience for all of us involved. The mentors obviously contribute their time, their expertise to different projects, but it's a mutually beneficial relationship for all involved because the mentors learn from the respective project leaders, especially around the thematic areas. The project leaders also acquire additional expertise and skills from their mentors, and for all of us involved, contributing actively to these projects basically means that it's a win-win scenario for all of us involved. So it has been very inspirational to see the progress this program has managed to make over the years, and also just the motivation, the determination of all involved, and especially last year, actually, because of COVID-19 developments, many project leaders were struggling, to be honest. There were project leaders who found themselves stuck in different countries because the borders were closed. And even despite of all of these challenges, they continued with their projects. Many of them did. Some of them could not, for obvious reasons. But just to see that kind of determination of the project leaders and the commitment also of the mentors is really inspirational.
That's excellent. Yeah, I was thinking about asking. Obviously, COVID had to affect the process to some degree, but also I'm wondering if anything like came out of it in terms of inspiration or ways that people were able to overcome some of these obstacles and become even more motivated. Like what did you see in terms of how people were connecting and supporting each other through this time period?
So certainly this is a very supportive community. So, you know, the events that we are having is about, you know, a person coming to the stage and then presenting what he did or she did. And then it's like, you know, it's like a joint enthusiasm. you know, and it's we are not expecting from everyone that essentially they will come to the end of the project in the first year, or it's always like they start from some maturity level and then they come to some degree of development, but still it's always like cheering and supporting, and so this is very, very positive, and we are always struck with this enthusiasm. It's, you know, Tanya mentioned that, now Igor mentioned that. For me, it was a game changer, right? To see all this positive energy and this positive enthusiasm and friendships and all this stuff, which is, you know, going across the cultures, going across the globe, no limits. It's just, you know, a spinal goal, which would be creating something that would make a benefit for others. And this is something which I think is very, very important. Now, in respect to COVID, so certainly I think it's this final event is somehow missing, because we were there in Vipava for a week, having wine and food and everything and fun. It's different, right? It's different. We are seriously looking at establishing this again as soon as possible, and maybe we will have, I don't know, just, you know, separate event. We will see how this will evolve, but certainly social aspect, social touch, to see that you are not alone and not alone with your mentor, that you are a part of this global whole, this is very important. Yeah. And we are missing that a little bit. Yeah.
I would probably guess that, I mean, when people's project ends, they don't stop this work. Have some of the people who've been mentored, do they become mentors within the program too?
Yeah.
That's actually true. Many project leaders do become mentors in the following year. But just to also elaborate on the question that you asked earlier about how, let's say, COVID affected the continuation of certain projects and how certain approaches were adjusted as a result. So what this kind of, in a way, forced us to do was to have a more, besides having that supportive community, we also had to be a bit more agile, more, and we had to adapt our approach too. So typically you would have, let's say that the program continues over a period of 6 months. It's January to June each year. But as a result of all of these challenges and delays, for example, we then gave project leaders an opportunity to continue with our projects beyond that original timeframe. And this was then also obviously supported by mentors who were more than willing to continue providing the guidance and expertise. So one outcome of this was that we had to be a bit more agile and more sympathetic to the request of project leaders to actually get more time and therefore more expertise from the mentors beyond the initial time frame.
Exactly. It's really good that we can be flexible. We can extend deadlines. We can decide together to move the final event from June to October. We also encourage some participants to continue next year if they cannot finish this year. So we really try to find a solution and be supportive in such cases. In all cases.
I mean, to me, it sounds like for Tanya and Mitya, that with all the other things you do, this sounds like a full-time job. So congratulations on you for that. But I mean, what are you getting out of doing all this program? I mean, obviously there's a lot of pride we can hear in this, but like, is this like feeding your practice? And so,
Ellen, it's just a privilege to be in this program. It's so wonderful to meet all these people and to work with them. It's the best you can get out of it. And then you see in practice how people can do wonders together when they have same goals and they open themselves in a genuine, open communication. So that's just something I would like everyone to experience. It's just great to be part of it.
That's rewarding, certainly.
So people listening to this, they may be inspired to apply to bring a project to Open Education for a Better World. And people who maybe you say like, hey, wait a minute, I think I could offer something as a volunteer mentor. So give us your pitch to invite people who are listening to this podcast to be part of this project.
So yeah, everyone there around in the light, in the dark. So just come across, there is an official page, there is an official invitation, there is an official timeline, but there is also an unofficial timeline. So if you want to be involved, or if you want to get involved, or, you know, get additional information, just contact us directly, and that's it. And, you know, just become part of this global, whole global movement. You know, it's really rewarding to see all these people, to see all this positive energy and enthusiasm. And, you know, at the end of the day, creating things. So not just, you know, having fun, but really creating things that make sense. So that's it. I mean, very, very welcome, everyone.
Okay, audience, you've heard this. Marcella, do you have anything you want to throw into the mix here? You've been kind of quiet.
I know. I'm sorry. I was listening. But yes, I do have a question. I'm curious. I'm going back to what Tanya was saying. This has been such a successful program and growing exponentially every year. But I do wonder if there's one thing that has surprised you in this process, something that you didn't expect that has come your way through being involved in the running of this program.
Well, for me, it was really wonderful to see very, very young people to be motivated in taking part. So we actually decided to introduce a youth section as a novelty this year. Mm. And we really believe in this to have some wonderful consequences. These young people are full of great ideas and they think for the future. So that's really something that surprised me a little bit, but I was more than pleased to see this.
Absolutely. And if I can follow up with another question is, what's next? You have been growing so much and now you have different topics, geographical diversity. Where do you see Open Education for a Better World in the next 5 or 10 years?
Anne, will you start or should I? So what I would, you know, if I would see in 5 years that this would be something that runs without us and it spreads without us and it really, you know, create concrete results and concrete changes in the world, not only in education, but also in other domains, that would be for me the right goal, the right satisfaction. So certainly what I see, and we had some pilots already years ago about involving youngsters, right? So today it's like, you know, we older academics, not you ladies, we men, older men, academics, creating this educational materials for the younger people and they're bored, right? And when you ask them, so, you know, simple question would be, so how would you teenager X explain this particular topic to teenager Epsilon? And it's what they create is completely different, and it's fun and it's lively and it's, you know, and this is happening right now. So with this, one of the projects right now in this youth section is about this. So it's not just creating OERs, but also creating a community and creating IT support for that. So that would be a very interesting thing coming out. So I've seen just last week, I had the talk, I had the demonstration of what they did, and they have things which are completely crazy in things of how we are thinking about education. So they came into a room and they have like a green button. So green button here and green button there. And of course, the first question was, why do you have these green buttons? Because this is the reward. This makes that you are a part of the community. And it's a complete rewarding mechanism behind. So how would you create the OER and why should you create the OER? And then all this existing communities, you know, from Facebook to TikTok to all these things that they are using, they try to migrate in something which will be for the good, for the benefit, not to just to lose time. So those are the things which I think that are certainly impacting what we do. We don't know yet. We see a little bit. We see a bits and pieces here, but this will be coming out. Certainly, that will be coming out. So those are the things which I hope that they will happen, and this is why we are trying to, you know, invite everyone, you know, all the communities which we are friends with, working with, just join forces and make this happen, and as a global movement.
So as you see, it's not a project with a very strict plan for the next 5 years, 10 years, and so on. We are open for new ideas, for new challenges. We try to help and encourage. We will help and encourage as long as we can, but definitely we would like to see the program spreading also independently of us. Why not?
Yes, and why not? And we're so excited and pleased that you're willing to spend this time with us and talk to us about the project. We hope the exponential growth continues, and it's really hard to think of some, you know, getting this reward is award for this project, program, this movement is so well deserved. And all of us want to congratulate you and everybody involved. This is a giant network, and that is what we need to create a better world, right?
Exactly. And thanks again for you know, all these endorsements and everything what you do. I mean, we know each other for you know, for decades now. I really think that if we would be able to enlarge this community, because it, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the open courseware or the past open courseware, now the Open Education Consortia and Opencast and all the other communities are more or less still closed communities. Like, we, you know, we preach to each other things that we know, we are all for it and so on. And I think it's very, very important that we go across these lines. And that would, you know, projects like this or programs like this and similar would certainly help make this change. And this is essential. And we have to join forces. That's eminent, you know.
Thank you, Media. Thank you, Tanya. Thank you, Marcella. Thank you, Igor. Thank you, listeners out there. This is another episode of OEG Voices. And so, again, this has come to you from Open Education Global. When you hear this online, you'll hear some music in the background, and we call it Joyful Meeting, which is how we usually feel with these gatherings. It's by an artist named Crow Wander, and it's from the Free Music Archive. License, Creative Commons, Attribution, Non-Commercial License. We love the open stuff. And so you'll find this episode on our site, voices.oeglobal.org. And we really want you to engage in follow-up conversations with Media and Tanya in OEG Connect. But more than that, we want you to get involved with Open Education for a Better World. If you're not excited, as I'm excited, and listening to them describe this, I can't think of a better thing to do. And so thank you, everybody, again, for spending this time with us.